Hello, everyone. Welcome back to a very special episode of Uncanny Treks as we take up the sequel to Archie vs. Predator, Archie vs. Predator 2. I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Matt, how you doing this evening?
Doing pretty well, Bob. This volume of Archie vs. Predator is so much different than the one we read and covered last week.
Yeah, it's very strange. I apparently had read this, but it just did not stick in my mind at all. So it was rereading it again for the first time. I think I read it 4 years ago, but yeah, it had not stuck in my mind at all. So I was freshly surprised by almost everything in it.
So the biggest difference to me going into this is that the art style is different. And we do have a different artist here.
Yeah, Alex DeCampi wrote both this and the first one. But the first one was illustrated by Fernando Ruiz, who has a, shall we say, classic Archie style, right? Whereas this is illustrated by Robert Mack, who is channeling something very different. But Matt, I think you've read something by Hack before, right? Because I gave you Chilling Adventures of Sabrina for Christmas several years back.
Yes, I have read it. I like the art style. It's not really a criticism of the art itself. It's just, it's such a change in style to what we saw in the last issue. That it changes the atmosphere.
Oh, it definitely does.
Much more serious tone.
Would you say between the bright colors and cartoon colors or muted colors and more, quote, realistic features in this series, do you have a preference?
I prefer the other volume because when I think of Archie comics, I always think of the more funny, goofy, laughing, slapstick comic stuff. But I know we're putting Predator into it, but that's what I want to see. I want to see Predator entering their world that's so different from our own. Whereas in this volume, I feel like their version, this new Riverdale we'll be talking about, is much more similar to our world.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that in terms of having Predator in it, but the first one was very much like cartoonizing Predator. And the first priority with the art for Archie vs. Predator 2 is something else, but arguably this is like bringing horror comic aesthetics or Predator comic aesthetics to Archie rather than bringing Archie aesthetics to Predator like in the last one.
Well, Bob, this book starts off in an interesting way.
A 2-page text recap of the last trade. Did that seem maybe like more than was needed to you?
I didn't read it. I probably should have. But it's there for those who just, I guess, pick this up randomly and decide they don't want to read the first volume and are big fans of the newer Archie. I don't know why you would need that much of a summary. It wasn't that complicated.
It is a very interesting approach. The comic does a pretty good job of explaining itself as a sequel, too, without the text recap. But it's an interesting approach.
I want to go point out one thing that did confuse me, Bob. The transition at the beginning of the comic, I really wish, and this is a big wish, if Robert Hack would have stuck with the original art style at the beginning before they go into New Riverdale, because I think my brain would have understood what was going on better.
That is sort of a problem, is that we open up on the devastation of classic Riverdale that was caused in the Archie vs. Predator series. But it's already all in the Robert Hack style. And so we have this, which we'll talk about in a minute, we have this transition between universes, right? But in that transition, the art style doesn't change. And so it's a little off-putting that you already have the new Riverdale style art on classic Riverdale at the start of the comic. But to start with number one, Darkness at the End of the Lane, Matt, how did you feel? This is maybe the most prominent stylistic issue with the series besides just art style. And that's the fact that we have Archie Predator as a character now. Archie Predator is a combination of Archie and a Predator. Because in the last series, Veronica's rich dad's med bed was used to merge Archie and Predator. And so Archie Predator doesn't speak English, but he speaks in emojis. And I was wondering, how do you feel about Archie Predator's emoji speak being a constant presence in this series?
I just don't read them. I didn't read a single thing Archie Predator said the whole comic.
You just tapping out on the emojis, Matt?
I just ignored it and pretended he's over there just bumbling, just doing whatever he wants to.
That's a fair approach. That's what I did as well. Although I do want to say just contextually, it's a little interesting. So the original Archie versus Predator came out in 2015, and this came out in 2019. Is that right?
That's correct.
That surprised me. I didn't realize there was such a gap between these. I thought Archie versus Predator was a success, and I thought they did a sequel quickly. So I didn't realize there was such a gap. But the other thing that's interesting about that gap is that because Archie versus Predator was a bit of a success, Alex DeCampi started an Image comic series, and she had Carla Speed McNeil, who you might remember from the Josie and the Pussycats Finder crossover comic at the end of Archie versus Predator. She had Carla Speed McNeil on art, and Carla Speed McNeil, of course, is famous for the Finder series. And in that series by DeCampi and McNeil, No Mercy, it was basically Archie versus Predator, but stripped of the existing Archie and Predator IP, where it was a teen romance comic with slasher elements. And one of the things in that comic they did was she heavily incorporated emojis into the dialogue boxes. And so I just find it amusing that DeCampi had success with Archie versus Predator. She adapted that success into her own creator-owned series. And then when she goes back to do the sequel to Archie versus Predator 2, she then takes some of the stylistic things she did in her creator-owned series and brings it in, albeit in a slightly different way. If I remember correctly, in No Mercy, no character just speaks in emojis. It's just like all the characters just spice their dialogue with emojis.
Okay. Well, see, I can live with that. But this, just speaking strictly in emoji, where I have to try to like interpret what they're saying, is not easy for me. It takes me a minute.
In contrast to what you're saying, I actually find it easier here because, like you, I just ignore Archie.
Yep.
Whereas, granted, I only read a couple of issues of No Mercy back when it came out in 2016 or 2017. But in my memory, and maybe my memory is incorrect, but in my memory, it was difficult to parse like what the emojis were actually doing to the character's dialogue they were amplifying. And because of that, and also just I didn't think the series was for me. I'm not necessarily saying the series was bad, but it was not for me. That's fine. Not everything needs to be for me. And so I only read a couple of issues of No Mercy and quit reading it. But in a weird way, even though it sounds better to just use the emojis as a spice, it makes more sense to only have the one character do it and then to have everybody else be speaking normal word balloons.
Honestly, for the listeners, if you're not big on the emoji thing, you can totally skip what Archie's saying and you're not going to lose any understanding of what's going on in the comic.
I'd go ahead and highlight my favorite panel, or actually a series of panels from issue number one. And that's on page 18. To add to my description, I should really emphasize I was confused about the timeline of this comic when I was rereading it here to talk about with you. I had in my mind that this maybe came out 2016, 2017, the year or two after the original. And then I was very surprised when I got to this nine panel page on page 18 in issue one in the trade. And it's a nine panel grid of Veronica driving and giving a very metatextual monologue about classic Archie comics to a sleeping Betty. And as she's driving, it's pretty clear that they've changed universes, that they've shifted, that something's happened. Straight anticipation of that famous scene in Twin Peaks The Return when Dale Cooper and Diane are in the car and they transition universes. And when I first read this, I thought this probably came out before Twin Peaks The Return. I was, my God, did Alex DeCampi predict or anticipate a major plot development in the Twin Peaks The Return finale? And then I realized, oh no, actually this came out in 2019 and it's clearly an homage to Twin Peaks The Return from 2 years earlier.
The way this is framed with the panels, the center panel shows you that she's about to turn left or make a left curve turn. So it sets you up. And if you look at her eyes, it gives the impression that maybe she's either nodding off or not watching the road or something. So I got the idea that maybe this was all just in her head. I don't know. It does give that Twin Peaks vibe of it's slightly ambiguous about what's actually going on here. I like it.
Is it all a dream? Did they crash and die? And this is the afterlife.
Right.
Transition universes. Yeah. All of that's been play, right?
All you know is that they end up in a new Riverdale, greeted by a big old sign.
A big old classic comics coloring and font style sign that says Riverdale, the mirth of the nation, which I really don't know if that's the best or the worst joke ever. If listeners don't know, it's a play on the old racist movie, The Birth of a Nation. Right. And so on one level, it's just a silly pun. But on another level, it is maybe making a comment about how white bread and Americana fantasy Archie comics are. And so even though obviously, to my knowledge, Archie comics aren't that racist, but there is still a white bread quality to the imaginary fantasy of youth in Archie. And so connecting that up with this aggressive white supremacist racism of Birth of a Nation, the film, is a very interesting move and a joke.
Yeah, I'm with you, Bob. I can't decide if I'm okay with it or not, because the amusement of our nation versus where this comes from.
I definitely see where it comes from as a joke. I just think maybe it's a little too harsh, but it's not wrong.
Well, Bob, let me tell you about my favorite panel, though, Bob.
We meet our first new Archie cast member.
It switches over to the new Archie cast here that we'll talk about in a moment. But Dilton actually purchased a Predator helmet off eBay. And there's a panel. It shows six different frames. And in each one, he's trying it on. He's looking in the mirror, seeing how cool he looks and stuff. You ever done anything like that, Bob? You ever purchased a mask or a prop or a costume piece online just to try it out, see what it looks like on you, and put it away?
I did just get a picture of me in a Four Horsemen shirt that I bought off eBay. But in fairness, I then wore that shirt to a couple live shows. So at least it didn't go into my closet to never emerge.
So you never bought a Batman cowl or a luchador mask or something?
You're going to either have no response to this or think it's abjectly stupid, but I bought a Jesse Jackson pin to wear with my Bernie Sanders pins when I was canvassing and caucusing for Bernie in 2016 and 2020, because I was hoping to stress to, I'm trying to win over older Clinton boomer voters, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to stress, this is a movement in the party. Jackson did this in 88. We're just trying to finish what Jesse started, that sort of thing. So I've done that.
You're saying that is comparative to me putting on a latex Batman mask to see if I look like Batman is the same thing.
My example is more functional.
Bob, I've purchased these masks not to be functional. There's no function at all. That's the whole idea.
Well, there is a cosplay element to both, though.
Oh, I see. Cosplay. I see where you went.
I like to think that if I were politically conscious as a 3-year-old, I would have supported Jesse Jackson. Well, and then another example would be one of my union comrades did really strong work in a contract campaign we did out here. And so I bought him a medal from the Soviet Union with Lenin's face off eBay, and I gave it to him as a thank you for his work in the campaign.
There you go.
And I mean, he never wore it in public, much to my disappointment and chagrin. So
he did put it on at home in front of a mirror, though, Bob. So you got, yes, you understand. That is what I'm talking about. There you go.
I do like that your examples are Batman mask and Predator mask, and my examples are Jesse Jackson pin and a Vladimir Lenin medal.
They're so politically shielded. Mine are, I want to look like a luchador.
I was just going to say, Matt, outside the wrestling show I went to last week, they were selling luchador masks, and I was sorely tempted to buy one.
When I went down to Mexico, I bought a couple. So we find out, Bob, that in purchasing this mask, though, or this helmet, whatever you want to call it, it sends a signal to the Predators, who are apparently on Mars, checking out the Mars rover, and they're trying to locate it. It sends out like a distress signal. So now they're aware that this Predator is on Earth.
They're coming for our new Riverdale, and we also get the introduction of a Predator pit bull, mm-hmm. See, peeing on a Mars rover.
It pees green, because anybody needs to do it.
It's like xenomorph urine, quite something. So that moves us into issue number 2, Pleased to Meet Me. And Matt, so we have our Veronica, classic Veronica. She has a flip phone. And then we see in the early stages of this issue, we see classic Betty, classic Veronica, and Archie Predator meeting the cast that we can call New Riverdale. Did you have any sense when you were reading this who these New Riverdale cast members are?
Not really. I knew who they were. I know who they're supposed to be.
Archie and Jughead.
It's the same characters. They're just designed a little differently, and they act differently. And to me, I felt like, was this some sort of tie-in to the show Riverdale, which came out, I believe, in like 2017, 16, somewhere there?
Yeah, I like what you said there, because you're correcting. I mean, this publishing imprint that these characters come from is called New Riverdale. And I've called them the new Archie cast. But saying that, yeah, it makes it sound like, oh, it's new characters. And there are a couple of new characters, but yeah, for the most part, like you said, it's reimagined, updated, contemporary versions of existing classic Archie characters.
It's like the New 52.
What we're dealing here, Matt, is precisely the New 52 for Archie Comics, which I believe started in 2015 which was the same year that Archie versus Predator came out. And I think it was done in response to the Riverdale show, which I think started in 2016. But I don't think they're exactly the same. The aesthetics and what they're in, the continuities, are a bit separate. There also might be some comics that are set in the Riverdale universe, the Riverdale, the show universe, that are different than the new Riverdale, which, as you correctly say, is basically New 52 for Archie. So in 2015, I think Archie either stopped or really, really slowed down its production of classic Archie comics. They got some pretty top flight writers and artists like Mark Waid, Chip Zdarsky, Fiona Staples, Annie Wu, to come on and do new books about this updated mid-2010s versions of Archie. And so that's why we have jokes like we saw the time travel device, Memory Lane, in the first issue has been closed for gentrification by Waid Enterprises, right? And so DeCampi sort of winking at Mark Waid as overseeing this reboot of Archie. Yeah. The one other thing I should say, Matt, that maybe would be useful to give listeners a little context. So Archie versus Predator, I think, came out a little before the start of New Riverdale. In hindsight, you could see Archie versus Predator as the funeral for old Riverdale, or the Crisis on Infinite Earths for old Riverdale. And then in a really interesting way, I think the New Riverdale imprint only ran from like 2015 to 2020 or thereabouts. And so this is coming out, this Archie versus Predator 2 is coming out in 2019. And so in a weird way, you could see this Archie versus Predator 2 as the Crisis on Infinite Earths or the funeral for the New Riverdale. And so it is funny that I think this is more Alex DeCampi just exploiting the timing than what was consciously intended by the Archie publishers. But in a way, it's Alex DeCampi gets to use both of these Predator crossovers to close down an Archie universe.
It's like a crisis. These Predators just keep coming and tearing up Archie's worlds. That'd be an excellent crisis story.
Which, honestly, now that I think about that, there's a very, I don't know if you know this, but have you ever read the Warren Ellis Stormwatch or Authority comics?
I've read some of it, yeah.
So famously, and this doesn't get reprinted because of the rights, but one of the things that Warren Ellis used to transition from Stormwatch was the existing Jim Lee book, right, that was an X-Men knockoff. And so Warren Ellis took over Stormwatch, wrote it for maybe 15 issues, relaunched it as the Authority, and had some of the same characters, but mostly new characters, and made it much more of a comment on the Justice League instead of a knockoff of the X-Men, which was what Stormwatch had been. And the thing he used to make the transition was they had an Aliens crossover. It was Stormwatch and Aliens. Oh. And so he killed off some of the Stormwatch characters and closed down Stormwatch in the fight with the Xenomorphs. So there's actually is a interesting tradition in independent comics using your Alien and Predator crossovers as a way to close down your publishing initiative.
Oh, there are real overlords, folks. Predators and Aliens. It's going to be the end of this.
All this is to say, that's why we have this realistic Robert Hack style art that is, like Matt says in the notes, somewhat reminiscent of the TV show Riverdale, but also somewhat different.
You have to be familiar with Archie comics. I don't know a lot of people that read Archie month to month or anything at this point in life, but I do remember there being a ton of Archie comics at the grocery store and things like that, but it was not this style.
And I don't know how successful this stuff truly was, but I do think that there was a time 15 to 10 years ago, because we talked about Life with Archie last time, right? And then After Life with Archie, and then Archie versus Predator, and then this new Riverdale stuff. I do think that was the peak of maybe that period, which was probably 2010 to 2016, 17. That was the peak of mainstream interest in Archie. And so I don't think millions of people were reading it or anything. But I do think people were really clued into what Archie was doing back then in a way. We weren't that much, but I think some other mainstream comics readers were.
There are a couple of panels in here that I really did like in this second issue. The first panel I wanted to point out was on page 38. And on that page, you have Archie Predator. He reveals his actual face and you see the Archie face just rip apart and the Predator pieces come out. It's really cool. But see, they all think it's a Halloween costume, which shows how stupid they are. But also, it gives an excuse as to why he is this way. Because it's Halloween, Bob. Everybody dresses like this on Halloween.
And it also plays into your deep and abiding love for Two-Face.
Oh, yeah. I like me some Two-Face.
One other formal thing that I wanted to talk about the comic, Matt, that I think first appears in the second issue, and we already talked a little about like the use of emoji speak for
right.
Predator in the first one. Here we have the introduction, I think, of them using all caps censored to mark out curse words, which I wanted to say, I've danced around on the emoji speak. On the one hand, I don't like it. On the one hand, I appreciate what they're going for. But with the censored man, I don't like it. The way you do curses in comics is you write out the keyboard signs. You use the percent sign. You use the number sign. You use the right. X sign. You don't write censored over it. That's so lame. I hate that.
Well, they took a label maker, though, the label maker label, and put the word censored. It's almost as if they took the actual physical page of the comic and put a labeled censor over it. It's interesting. At least they did it creatively. I'll give them that. It's better than what I see on the internet now, where they just blur out one letter and I'm not supposed to know what the other letters are.
That's a good point about, at least there is a real craft to the lettering of creating what looks like the texture of a label from a label maker.
Correct.
I will say, when people are blurring stuff out, when they post stuff on social media, I don't know if this works, but I think the reason they do that is less about you and it's more about the algorithm.
It is, because they don't want their stuff to get taken down for having a dirty word on it. So they have to fool the algorithm into thinking it's something else. But then it loses its meaning. So what's the point in posting?
Well, my favorite panel was on page 41. And this was a callback to, we had a lot of debates in Archie versus Predator 1 between Betty and Veronica, where Betty likes magic and fantasy tropes. And Veronica is more of a materialist and science fiction tropes. And this was a callback to that, where new Veronica was getting angry because she's yelling at classic Veronica that, I thought you told me you didn't come from a dystopia. And very precisely, very pedantically, classic Veronica is explaining, I said we didn't come from a future dystopia. We do come from a present dystopia that we sort of made. And she's saying that while she has this very striking shrug going on with her hand gesture. And I love that combination of dialogue and body language from Robert Hack's art. An amusing callback to the debates we had between classic Betty and Veronica in the first Archie Predator.
I do like that. And just the way she's so nonchalant with her hand. It's very well drawn. Another scene that I really like from this comic, it's on page 50. All the Predators are at the Halloween dance and they've got their targeting systems going. So there's these lasers shooting out, trying to know where everybody's at. They've got those hand cannon targeting lasers. Really cool looking. I just like it because it crosses the entire dance, crisscross lasers. Look, reminds me of Wolverine doing the scratch thing with his claws.
The visual language of the targeting lasers slashing, not physically, but visually slashing all the characters at the dance. And then, yeah, the language of Wolverine's three claw lines.
I love that. That's very well drawn. I like that scene.
To keep moving on, issue number 3 is Kiss Before Dying, which will become a very prophetic title when we get to the climax of this issue. But I wanted to start, Matt, on page 62, we're in the trade. So page 62, issue 3, did you catch the references here to Punisher, Winter Soldier, and Cosmo?
I actually didn't know when I was reading it, but now that I'm going back, they do mention Bucky and Cosmos and a bunch of other characters I have no clue who they are.
So, listeners, you may or may not know that there was, I think in the late 90s, there was an Archie versus Punisher one-shot. And we are going to cover that next week. We're already doing Archie versus Predator. Why don't we do the other AVP? And so from that, classic Veronica has Frank's number and she's trying to text him, but she gets the Winter Soldier instead. And so she's arguing with someone named Bucky. And then, yeah, Betty references Cosmo the Space Dog from Guardians of the Galaxy. And then down the page, we get references to the Mighty Crusaders, Black Hood, S.H.I.E.L.D., and Super Duck. I don't know about Super Duck, but the Mighty Crusaders, Black Hood, and S.H.I.E.L.D. are all Archie superheroes who you may have come across at some point, Matt. Reboot them every 10 years or so. I think in the early 90s, DC had a run with the Archie characters. And I actually have never read or heard of the Archie superheroes meeting the teen Archies, but I'm sure at some point they have.
Okay, so it's like a separate thing. Wow.
As we get from a lot of the references in the first one and this one with Memory Lane and Sabrina and Jughead time traveling, the Archie universe is vast and complex.
I always just thought it was very small. It's grown. I guess any universe just gets bigger and bigger. It's always expanding.
Yeah, if you just tell stories anywhere for 50 years, just keep growing and growing.
You got to start being creative. Well, Bob, my favorite panel in this third issue is on page 70, and it's where the new Veronica is sacrificing herself to the predators. She just has this big smile on her face as they just rip her to shreds. You see her arm come just unlodged. You see all these holes in her body. Her ribs are falling out. It's disgusting. But
the bone is sticking out from the arm.
It's very gory, but a really cool panel.
My favorite panel from this issue is gory, but not as gory as that. And it's the next page on 71, where you see the predator pit bulls eat Jughead's dog, Hot Dog. And I just thought that was really funny. I like dogs, and I don't like dogs to get hurt. But I don't know. There's something annoying about Jughead's dog, Hot Dog, at least in this version. I don't know. I don't have strong opinions about Jughead's dog, Hot Dog, beyond this. And on the one hand, maybe listeners, your Bob is sick for enjoying this. But on the other hand, Jughead immediately makes friends with the Predator Pitbull next issue. So I'm going along with the spirit of the comic.
It's one of those shaggy dogs, too. You can't see its eyes when it's getting eaten apart.
Which makes it more or less horrible, I guess, depending on your perspective. Well, and Matt, you pointed out in the notes, too, that another callback here is to Archie versus Predator 1, the very gory death of Sabrina's cat, Salem.
Salem died in the last volume, which was disgusting, but it was an interesting image. They're very creative with the way they murder these animals.
They are very creative indeed. Well, Matt, the title of this issue gets realized on the last page of this issue as we have a shower scene between Betty and Veronica, which has the great lead-in line from Betty. It hasn't been about Archie for a long time, has it?
Yeah, this is no, it hasn't. But Bob, then I want you to look down at the next panel. She's kissing her on the forehead. So are we supposed to believe that they're together and that they're okay? Or is this just more of like a, what is this? Is this supposed to be them like admitting their love for each other?
Well, I think we are supposed to believe. I put in the notes, make out. But
she's not. She clearly is just kissing her on the forehead.
Well, Matt, I would say between the fact the long time before, and I'm looking forward to getting to when we see Betty again in the comic, but it's actually about 10 or more pages into the next issue before we see Betty again.
Oh, so you think they had a make out session?
Matt,
with all this carnage going on.
I think they probably had sex. I was just saying make out to be polite, but when you were questioning me in the notes about that, I just changed it to, I thought you were getting mad at me for underplaying it.
I'm not getting mad at you, period, Bob. I'm just saying the way the scene is described, I think they cocked out and they could have done more, but they didn't.
They could have done more.
They try to play goofy where it's like, oh, she kissed her on the forehead. I don't like that. I wish they would just be implicit. Hey, here they are making out in the steam room. They're kissing each other on lips. Cut to the next thing. But no, they try to play. They try to screw around it. I don't like that.
Here's the counterpoint, Matt. There's already a ton of lesbian subtext between Betty and Veronica in the original comics.
Yeah.
And in Archie versus Predator.
Well, this just adds to it. It's just more, to me, this is just more subtext in a sense. But I would prefer it not be. I think it makes more sense if they actually had a relationship and you see
but
it.
But to keep going, there's then 10 pages of them off screen, presumably getting busy. And then at the last, and this is jumping way ahead, but the last page of this comic, Matt, is like them sitting in Buffalo.
I'm just saying they could have done more. Why didn't they have him kiss on the lips? Is all I'm saying. Why not? That would have made way more sense.
Well, and she is kissing her on the forehead, but I mean, it's also Betty has her hands around Veronica's neck. Veronica has her hands around Betty's waist.
Not on her face, not on her neck. This was purposely drawn this way. They don't have the balls to actually have them kiss for reals. That may even be written into their contract or something.
No, I agree with you that I was not looking at the page very closely.
Yeah.
I just assumed that they had actually kissed. And you're right that it's a kiss on the forehead. Nonetheless, the four panels before it play it like they're about to kiss. They're making eye contact. Their lips are moving in. And then so, yeah, that you're right that in that moment, they don't show a full-on kiss between Betty and Veronica. But I'm just saying that given all the subtext before this, given the long delay, and given that the last page of this series, spoilers, is them in New York surrounded by gay pride flags. I think,
yeah,
I take your point, but I'm just
saying it was a cop out on their part, because they could have easily just had them actually kiss and just seal the deal and be like, oh, that's cool. Instead, well, they're trying to make it, are they, aren't they? Even when we get to the last panel, we'll talk about it too.
To your point, though, I don't know if the writer and artist could have done more. I don't know what the...
That's what I'm also thinking, is that they couldn't, because it's probably written that you're not allowed to have them actually kiss each other or not actually have a... You can imply they have a relationship, but you can't actually show them in one.
It does make me wonder, too, how same-sex stuff is handled in the show Riverdale.
Good point.
And also in the new Riverdale comics, because that's another interesting... I mean, there's a couple interesting layers of this is classic Betty and classic Veronica.
Right.
But on the one hand, it very much is, and DeCampi's pushing it. But on the other hand, as you've pointed out, they're always drawn in this new style,
mm-hmm.
the post-apocalyptic survivors of their universe. So in a way, they are classic Betty and Veronica, and in a way, they're classic Betty and classic Veronica. But yeah, I don't know. It is interesting. But yeah, I don't know how the new Riverdale comics, because I haven't read any of them, I don't know how those handle issues of like same-sex desire between the main Archie cast members. I don't know how the show handles that. I don't know if you caught Kevin Keller, the character in this, and the character in Archie vs. Predator. He is gay. He was introduced in the early 2010s as a gay character, but I don't know in the ensuing 2010s how the company has really handled same-sex stuff beyond Kevin's character.
Well, Bob, let's move on into issue number 4, The Dance of Death. My favorite panel is on page 81, because this issue, guys, is really just a big fight between Predator and every single character that they can throw in there. An armless Midge holds up her axe. She just killed a Predator, only to collapse and die before telling Moose that she loves him.
Metal, Matt. Very metal. And then my favorite panel was, and this is what started this whole debate between Matt and me, is we have Betty fresh for what I'm going to describe as a makeout session in the shower, sitting on the football field, surrounded by red candles in a summoning circle. And I just think that's a really cool image as Veronica strides up to her.
It is pretty cool too, because the whole idea here is that they're going to summon the devil to fix all this. I mean, that's what it boils down to.
Indeed, indeed. Also worth noting that I believe Veronica is in totally different clothes. Which
okay, so she changed clothes.
She wouldn't need to anyway, because they were standing in the shower. But right. Still, that suggested. And then, Matt, I just wanted to go ahead and skip ahead to the end of this issue on page 97. We have Mr. Inferno, who you mentioned before, show up. And I really like the Mr. Inferno design here. All shadows, red eyes, black suit, gray waistcoat. Really cool look, really cool design. Even though this comic is definitely not as good as the first one, there is something about it that I think it maybe does cliffhanger better than the first one.
It does. Because you don't know what's going to happen next. Like, I didn't even know when the issue was going to drop. Usually, yeah. Oh, that's the cliffhanger they're leaving. I said, okay, dang, I want more.
We'll move into our final issue, issue 5, Escape Velocity. What was your favorite page or panel from this issue?
Well, Bob, in Escape Velocity, my favorite panel is at page 110. And it's, you got Jason and Cheryl, who are the brother and sister duo from the previous volume, who are coded as incestual.
Fair.
They're interrupted by a predator, and she ends up getting a big hole blown through her. But anyway, you see this giant hole inside of her. It's just creepy. And then what's on top of that, here, Bob, here's what's interesting is there's some inconsistency here, because on that same page, she says, Jason, you stupid little, and then she's got these like symbols.
That's how you should do cursing.
Bob agrees with the incestual sister that you should do your cursing that way.
Well, it's interesting because the symbols she has mostly actually aren't keyboard symbols. So in a way, it's meeting us halfway of yeah. There half emojis, half keyboard symbols.
Somebody has too much fun playing with these symbols on the computer and stuff, I think, is the issue. Somebody bought a font collection.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to say I didn't notice until you drew my attention to this. So we have the really striking panel of Cheryl gesturing towards the hole that the Predator has just blown in her torso.
Yeah.
Immediately on the next page, that's the next to last panel on the page. Then we have a sound effect for the final panel on the page. And then the next page is a 2-page splash of the school blowing up. It's a really cool transition. That's really well done. You got to hand it to DeCampi and to Robert Hack for that transition. It's awesome.
The word Bob is looking for is cinematic.
Very cinematic. And then I wanted to complain. I like this series pretty well. I don't think it's as good as the first one, but I like it quite a lot. But it is very meta, and sometimes that meta textuality works and sometimes it doesn't work. And I wanted to complain on 115, we see Mr. Inferno, the devil, giving his advice to Classic Betty and Classic Veronica. Basically, the devil is framing himself as, oh, I'm a fictional character, but I know I'm a fictional character, and so I've decided to live a normal metropolitan lifestyle. And I just found that a very strange thing. I sort of get it, and I sort of don't. On the one hand, it's just kind of making the devil sound like he's gay, which, I mean, obviously there's a lot of history of associating gayness with the devil, and there is an amusing thing in gay culture of joking about being Satanist and being gay, right?
Yeah.
And that's fine. I don't condemn that. But I don't know. I just thought the whole messaging of the combination of have the devil, but be, oh, no, I'm going to live an emancipated early 21st century metropolitan lifestyle and be subtextually queer. I don't know. I just thought it was like a strange thing that didn't fully come up. And even beyond the politics of how the comic is associating gay identity and Satanism, I just didn't think it was very good metatextual stuff, even though some of the other metatextual stuff in the comic is very strong.
Would you want to see more of this devil character?
In my memory, which could be wrong, I've read a lot of the new Archie horror stuff. I don't think he shows up in that very much, but I could be wrong. In older Archie comics, both is because Archie published their own like horror anthology comics in the 60s. And I think he shows up as a narrator in those, and he shows up as an occasional plot device in like mainline Archie comics where they're talking about Betty summoning him. So I'd be curious to read more of that, or I'd be curious to read more about this more modern queer version of Mr. Inferno. Yeah, sure. Down for it.
Mr. Inferno to meet Lucifer from the DC comics.
Did you ever read the DC or the Vertigo Lucifer series?
I watched the show, so that's enough, right?
That's, they're right. Apparently, they're radically different.
I want the guy on the show to meet this guy.
Oh, so that's who you're thinking about.
When I think of Lucy, this guy, him, they're somewhat similar to me. I think it would be, it's an interesting dialogue.
Feel free to say no to this, but you're making me want to have us read the Vertigo, or at least maybe not all because it's a big series, but try the Vertigo Lucifer series and see what you think of it as a watcher of the show.
I'd be interested because, I mean, the show is fascinating and it turns into those other long-running shows they put on network TV, how they start doing like episodic for the week shows, but they have a problem that week.
It was a police procedural.
Yes, yes, yes. It's more of a police procedural. There are some long-running plots, but yeah, each episode you could probably pick it up if you wanted and keep up with what's going on. It's not that difficult. It's not one you actually have to watch from like the beginning all the way to the end. It's one of those you could probably just catch an episode here or there and know what's happening.
We should try that and see what we think. That would be interesting. All right. So that was me complaining about page 115 with Devil being a little too meta, being a little too weird.
But what do you, that's the real question.
I think 116 is pretty great. We see the Devil doing his magic in the last two panels on the page. There's a lot of really cool coloring effects. There's a lot of interesting like plays with like abstract shapes. It was very cool. This was a little bit poking fun at is it Spider-Man One More Day?
Where, yes.
Where the devil resurrects Aunt May, right? And so
yeah.
I didn't enjoy the meta of treating the devil as, oh, I'm a fictional character who needs to emancipate himself, but I did enjoy the making fun of J. Michael Straczynski's run on Spider-Man. And that leads us into the final page of the trade and the final page of issue 5, Matt, which I think you wanted to say.
You have clarity. So what happens is Mr. Inferno, you know, basically does a snap and turns, instead of receiving the Predator helmet that starts the whole idea, Dilton does not get his Predator helmet. Therefore, the Predators are not called to Earth. So it's all good. But they do take Mr. Inferno's advice and they go to a city. And here they are. Where are you seeing gay pride stuff, Bob? Oh, there it is. New York City pride. So they're living in New York City.
I overstated it. Yes. It's one sign. Nonetheless, they've changed their look, but it doesn't have to be. They also just look like millennials in New York City in 2017.
Heavily implied. Yeah. We'll just say that. And you got the Predator over here, just man spreading his legs like he owns the world. Eating muffins. He's living his best life. I don't know how he was able to stay alive. Apparently, he also loves cupcakes or muffins. That's not a muffin, that's a cupcake. See, the emoji doesn't make any sense.
It's a muffin on the table, but a cupcake.
The muffin emoji was not available.
Maybe there just aren't muffin emojis. And yeah, there's an awful lot of stickers everywhere because of New York City.
Well, overall, Bob, it's pretty good comic. I like the first volume better. I'm just going to admit, I do like the first volume way better because it's goofier.
This does do a really good job of, on the one hand, repeating the first one, but on the other hand, not repeating it at all. And adding the metatextuality stuff, it doesn't always work, but when it does work, it can be pretty funny.
Yeah, I'll give it that. I haven't read, I'll be honest, I've read Archie on and off, but nothing consistently through the years. Maybe once or twice a year, pick up something and see it. So my exposure to Archie is not that great. I watched the first episode of the Riverdale thing, and that was it. So going into this, not knowing much about the characters, I did enjoy it, and I was able to keep up with everything going on. I liked it. If you love Predator, this is for you. It's more of what Predator does.
Well, I think last time, was the agreement last time that you let me rank Archie versus Predator as number 5. I was supposed to let you rank Archie versus Predator 2. Was that the agreement?
I thought it was the other way around. No, because I think you wanted Archie versus Predator way lower in the grand scheme of things, just because I was comparing it to some stuff I thought was way better, which I still do feel a little bit that way, but it's okay.
Well, Matt, here's one thing I would propose. On the one hand, they are very different, but there is a lot of continuity there too.
So there is, yeah.
I'm okay thinking of it as just slotting it into the number 5. So if listeners want to know, we have a 16-item list. The first item, the best comic we've looked at so far, is the John Hickman run on Fantastic Four. The worst comic we've looked at so far is the A.J. Lieberman run on Gotham Knights. So, and currently, Archie versus Predator 1 sits at number 5. I'd be okay slotting this in with Archie versus Predator as just one entry, but if you wanted to put it somewhere else, could also, I mean, definitely there are radical differences, not the least in the art, so I could be fine either way.
I slotted in with the other one. That way, they're just, it's the same writer. And I'm okay with that. If it's the same writer, and we did that with the other stuff too, we just covered the actual writer's stuff. So I'm fine with that.
If we were to have ranked it separately, where would you have wanted it?
I wanted to be the new number 12. I wanted to replace Dr. Midnight from 1999 by Matt Wagner.
And to be just underneath Brian Azzarello and Alex Maleev's Suicide Squad Get Joker.
Correct, yes.
That's interesting. I mean, as listeners know, if they listen to us regularly, we wound up with Batman Hush currently at number 8. And that screws up everything for me because I think everything is better than Hush. So I always want to fix that. But if I were going to rank it separately, I would put it after Gotham Year 1, which is currently number 10. And so I would put it at the new number 11, Suicide Squad Joker.
All right. Well, Bob, we're going to be reading Archie Punisher next week. Sounds good.
All right.
All right.